We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and got a great show for you today. Joined by my buddy, Casey Bubba. You should know him from the podcast world, but I was on his podcast recently, and he's been gracious enough to return the favor today. Bubba, how you doing?
I'm doing great, James. Thanks for having me. It's always a blast chatting with you, and it's opposite sides this time, so it's kind of fun to see what we can talk about to get ready for 2024.
Yeah, so the goal of today's pod is to kind of, we're going to look at roster resource, some public projection systems, kind of the most public and popular public resources that people use this time of year, and see which players or situations on which teams might be an open buying opportunity based on players being underprojected or overprojected. But first, I wanted to and I should let the listeners know this is brought to you by Fantrax, of course. This time of year, we're definitely repping Fantrax. Love having them as a sponsor. But Bubba, what's your current? How many drafts have you done so far?
I've officially completed 14. I am in the middle of number 15 right now. So sounds pretty bad, yes, but you know how it goes. It's kind of worth it. It's kind of fun. So yeah, we're deep into it.
Yeah, you and I are in a very similar place, minus the Gladiators. I see you've done 5 Gladiators. Yep. I decided to not do any Gladiators this year. Not that they're not fun. I just didn't really have time for it this year. But I'm in my 7th DC, which you've done 7 DCs. I've done 150. You've done 350s. So you've done a little bit more than me, but similar ballpark of teams.
Yeah, it's been fun trying to watch the changes of ADP, as we were talking about before the show, and it's definitely time to maybe shift out of the DC role here pretty soon.
Yeah, I was just lamenting to you before we started recording that I just got sniped on Josh Naylor, and I blame myself. I screwed up the order of players I took at the turn here, but It's a more frustrating time of year to draft, no question about it, than back in October, November, December. You're just constantly fighting with the people that are pushing up players. And I'm excited, honestly, for just a live in-person main event draft. Like that'll feel like kind of, it'll weirdly feel like I have more control then, but, okay. So we're going to talk about, we've each got 5 players or just kind of situations where we think either roster resource or public projection systems might be wrong about. And of course, you know, you can get, you know, I strongly recommend subscribing to rotowire.com for really good depth charts, really good projected batting orders, really good projected starters grid. But we're going to reference Roster Resource because Roster Resource is a free resource, and I strongly recommend supporting Fangraphs and getting their ad-free membership as well. If you use Fangraphs throughout the season, that's really the least you could do if you can afford it. But Roster Resource actually does affect ADP. It does affect the market because it's a free resource. It's the most popular public depth charts. And so, you know, obviously – it's a fantastic resource. We're not trying to pick anything apart with like this is wrong and like how dare they get this wrong. We're just trying to find spots where we think they could be wrong, and there could be players that are getting overdrafted or potentially underdrafted. So I'm going to let you go with your five first, so that I'll have my five last. But who's the first player that you think might be the projections or roster research might be wrong about this year?
It's not a, you know, maybe it's becoming a more popular name, but Mikel Garcia of the Kansas City Royals stands out to me in a big way because this is the roster resource effect to me. They haven't projected it ninth for the Royals. And if he hits ninth for the Royals, his ADP makes more sense because it's going to lower his at bats and all the upside he can bring to the table for you in fantasy. But I've talked to some Royals guys on my preview shows. There's been some blurbs out there. They want Mikel Garcia to lead off this year. That's what the Royals want. And if that were to happen, per se, that's a gigantic shift in plate appearances and so much more, which now just boosts Mikel Garcia's overall counting stats. Like, he's never going to be a world beater in power, but maybe he sneaks into 8 to 10 home runs. But more importantly, you know, he already put up 59 runs and 50 RBIs last year. Maybe we're going to combine for, you know, 180 plus, maybe creeping in on 100 runs scored, which is tremendous, a stat that kind of gets, at least in my world, overlooked a bit. And the big thing is stolen bases. Like, he put up 23 steals in 123 games last year. If you can lead him off, we're talking, and especially in this steals environment, and we saw what Bobby Witt did at the top of the Royals lineup last year. Mikel Garcia, in theory, could get to 40. You wouldn't be shocked if he was leading off, got to 40 stolen bases. He hit 272 last year, so now you put a really solid batting average, which I know we talked about with Freeman and Michael Harris and others, that you put that many plate appearances behind that batting average now, it carries so much more weight. It's just a trickle-down effect. If he goes from projected ninth to leading off with the stats he provides outside of power, he's now a very, very strong fantasy player, especially at a third base position, which is, it's not like horrific like it was years ago, but it still has like its ebbs and flows of talent there. I know we'll talk about another third base when we both like later, but Mikel Garcia, I think it's a fantasy boost if this playing time shift changes, and that's kind of what we're trying to speculate on at this point. So he's a guy for me.
Yeah, and the guy that Roster Resource has leading off is MJ Melendez. Melendez led off in 13 games last year, so it's not like he's just a very strong incumbent in that role. And something I love about Garcia, as is the case with, you know, more and more third basemen every year, it seems, is that he's just a really nice, like, if you were a little light on speed or don't have as many steals as you were hoping to have at that point in the draft, it's just so nice to be able to get 25, 30 steals from a guy that you can slot into your corner spot.
Yep. Big fan of the upside of him. He's kind of one I've had circled in these early drafts now to hopefully take advantage of, because if he starts leading off in spring training games, we all know this is about to shift in a few weeks.
So I was looking before we get to your next guy. And I think that Garcia is a great one. Obviously ninth to lead off is a huge difference. I don't necessarily disagree with the way Roster Resource has the outfield depth chart and Casey shaking out, but I did just note that if you can like kind of correctly project the playing time for like who's going to be their center fielder, for instance, yep, out of Kyle Isbell, Drew Waters, that could be quite useful in the draft and holds at least. I kind of had been assuming it would be Drew Waters in right field, and then they bring in Hunter Renfro, one of my least favorite signings of the offseason. And so now it's just, obviously they didn't bring Hunter Renfro in to sit on the bench. So it's just, that's a complicated situation, just the outfield in Kansas City. I wasn't going to have it as one of my five situations, because I don't necessarily think they have it wrong, but just, you know, having a guy like Drew Waters, maybe even, I know there's people that like Dairon Blanco. You know, if one of those guys went from projected reserve to full-time player, maybe Kyle Isbell's just not getting it done offensively, even though he is a good defender. That would be great for Waters' playing time if he was able to break through. But so far, the Renfro addition has me cooling on Waters a little bit.
Yeah, I've been on the Isbell side of that one because of the defense. I think gives him the early nod. But I've heard from many people what you just said is if he can't produce offensively, which has question marks still with Kyle Isbell, then you definitely have Waters and many other options in that outfield that make it murky. But all coming at cheap ADP. So that's the beauty of DC, is if you take a chance on one and they pan out, like Isbell could be a 15, 15, 15, 20 guy. Waters has the skills too. Just whoever gets that role could be a nice little game changer late in your DCs.
All right. Who's your second player you wanted to highlight?
Okay. Now, since I love catchers and everybody knows this so much, I had to mention one, because if you look at any projection site, majority of them have issues with catchers playing time to me. It's like the easiest one to look at. So I didn't want to do five catchers for everybody. But one that I'm in love with, we mentioned his brother earlier in the show, it's Bo Naylor. And they've already adjusted his playing time once since this first came out. He was projected for like 89, 90 games out the gate, and I just laughed at that. But Bo Naylor's projected, let's say, like the bat has him at 113, ATC 113, Steamer 91 still. They have not adjusted at all. This is a guy that's going to be their primary catcher. I know they like Austin Hedges to be a defensive catcher. I get it. Like, that's what he does. And maybe the Guardians are crazy enough to do this. I don't know. But in reality, it's got to be Bo Naylor. We saw what he did when he came up. Once he got comfortable after a couple weeks or so with the Guardians, finished the year very strong. Power, speed. I love everything he has to offer. I've said at times he's kind of here. He has the potential, it seems like, the skill set, you know, way better than I do, being the prospect guy. He feels like he could be what everyone wanted Dalton Varsho to be in the power and speed department. Maybe not to the max of that, but a better batting average too than Dalton Varsho can bring to the table. So I like Bo Naylor quite a bit. They haven't projected for, like I said, 113, 91 games. I think he plays like 125 to 130 at least, unless they really love Austin Hedges. But it could come with an okay batting average and some power and speed that I think is very nice to find at the catching position, and only 24. And if you want to get real picky, like Roster Resource has him batting sixth behind Ramon Laureano. Let's be real. How long is Ramon Laureano going to play this season? Naylor can move up in that order a bit too, which could be exciting. So I'm a big Bo Naylor fan, and I think there's a little more juice on the juice and the squeeze there for his projection numbers.
Yeah, no, that's a really good call. And that's a Roster Resource has him as kind of an everyday player, but the projections are not projecting that same level of plate appearances. And so, yeah, you know, if you're using like an auction calculator tool, for instance, it's not going to be giving you, and I agree with you, a accurate representation of the playing time there for Bo Naylor. You know, he's gotten better as a defender over the last couple seasons. And I think that, you know, part of the reason they have Austin Hedges there is to be a coach as much as a backup, really. So I definitely agree with you there. Bo Naylor, I mean, talked about him a couple times this offseason, but just such a high ceiling. You know, even if he just did kind of what Dalton Varsho did, like last year, I think he's still a good pick where he's going. But he, like you said, he could be better than that. And just getting that speed again, like with Michael Garcia, getting speed from a non-traditional position is great from a roster construction standpoint. So that's a great one. Bo Naylor with the Guardians. Who's your third guy?
Another player, and these are kind of, if you just want to insight, these are kind of guys I have lots of shares of, so it makes it easy for me to discuss here. Chaz McCormick. And this, to me, the projections surprised me a bit, because you look at Roster Resource and they have projected to be an everyday outfielder, not on the platoon, an everyday outfielder. And that's been the reports too, like early on out of Astros camp, is Chaz McCormick is the everyday outfielder at one of the three positions, most likely, I'm guessing, center field with the other players they have, but could be wrong. But he went 22 and 19 last year with a 273 average in 115 games. Did he overachieve? Potentially. But we've seen like mediocre, like decent power, a little bit of speed, but speed came off in a big way last year. But you look at projection sites, they only have him playing like 123 to 127 games. On paper, he should be 145, 150 plus in that theory, to me at least. Almost went 20-20 last year, and you look at the bat X, 17-14, ATC 19-15, Steamer 18-13. The average drops a ton, which if you want to pick on anything, a 331 BABIP, there should be some regression. I'm fine with that. But if he still hits 250 but plays so many more games than he played last year, why are we not still talking potential 2020 guy with Chaz McCormick? I know the projections aren't that far off, but it's still, like you mentioned, the auction calculator. These are things you got to factor in when you're kind of boosting things up. And just the extra games alone, even if you believe in the projection, give you that 2020 upside in a phenomenal offense in Houston. Like, I like Chaz McCormick a lot, and he's much farther down draft boards than I expect. Like, to get a 2020 potential player where he's getting drafted to me as a circle on the draft board.
Yeah, that's a really good call. McCormick is, you know, he was worth almost 4 wins last year. So why would we expect him to like be stuck kind of in that same 115 game role, especially when you look at the depth chart and it's not like they've got a bunch of guys that are going to be pushing him. For him to kind of be in this sort of like 80% role, like the projections kind of have him in, then you would be assuming that not only is Jake Myers playing almost every day, but then Mauricio Dubon is somehow, you know, getting starts over McCormick. Like, it's just that they don't have, you know, whoever you want to say their fourth outfielder is or their fifth outfielder, these guys aren't going to be pushing Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, so it's a great spot to be in, and again, phenomenal lineup. Like, that Astros team should score a ton of runs yet again.
Yeah, so this is almost kind of like the drafting public making Chaz McCormick go out there and prove it again.
Yep.
After what he did last year, and yeah, you're right. Like 19 steals in 115 games for the Astros. You know, I wouldn't necessarily project him for 25 or 30, but I don't think you could completely rule out those types of numbers. Okay, who's your fourth guy?
Okay, it's the guy I almost didn't put on here because I thought maybe you might have him on your list or whatnot, but I know you like him a lot. I got really excited about him about a month or so ago, kind of digging into things. That's Noel V. Marte of the Cincinnati Reds, a name that's starting to get talked about a lot more on the old X there. So his ADP, I'd imagine, starts to slowly go up. I guess the only thing that maybe holds him back, Roster Resource has him batting sixth or seventh, which could check out because it's just a loaded Reds offense. Like, that could be a thing, but at the same time, it's like projection sites haven't played 115 games, and I just don't understand what happens there unless there's a platoon I'm not aware of. But it feels like he's the everyday third baseman. You know, you might get a random Spencer Steer day or somebody goes and plays third base or something, but it seems like it's Noel V. Marte's job to kind of run with at this point in time. There's other positions on that team that have a lot of hands there, but maybe Candelario goes there, but he feels like the first baseman to me. So Noel V. seems like the dude that should be getting way more than 115 games. And even at those games, they have him for like 13-13, give or take. We've seen some pop and some speed in the minors. And more importantly, what I was really impressed with, I know a small sample, only 35 games last year, hitting .316 in the bigs. Like, he was comfortable. Now, pitchers might try to adjust to him and throw some more off-speed pitches or whatnot, but he was very, very good. Didn't, like, striking out 20% in his first go-around, I think, is strong. And the you would be able to attest his minor league plate discipline metrics were outstanding. So that's a big plus. So I think Noel V. Marte is a guy that is slowly creeping up draft boards as we get deeper into the draft season here, but he's another guy, the power, the speed, you throw in the batting average, he's going to be a run producer or scoring runs either way in Great American Small Park. So he's a guy that 115 games is way too low for me in the projection world.
Yeah. I think when you have a team that's got this much hitting talent, the projection systems are just going to sort of hedge a little bit, especially on the guys that are not as proven as everyday big leaguers. But you and I are aligned on Noel V. Marte. Like, if you don't hedge and you just give him, you know, you don't have to give him like 650 plate appearances. If you give him just like 600 plate appearances, he's quite a bit more appealing. So yeah, that's a great call. I might have another Red to talk about a little bit later in the show. But yeah, I mean, Noel V. Marte, is this a guy where have you been just kind of taking him at ADP? Do you push him up? Does he kind of fall into your lap? For me, he's kind of been someone who's just sort of fallen into my lap in a couple of drafts.
Early on, he definitely was falling into my lap. That was one of those, like, you looked at, even if you already had a third baseman, you'd see him on the board, and like, whoa, okay, well, we're going to adjust things for a minute here. He's now corner infielder, a backup third baseman or whatever. It seems like the last few drafts I've been in, you might need to be a slightly more aggressive. As like I said, the word's starting to travel, and you know how it goes in the content game and everything. The more people start talking about guys and certain people talk about guys, it goes wild. So he's starting to get a little more love on the draft board. I'm curious as we get into deeper drafts in like early March where he goes, but it was falling into my lap when it came to Noel V. Marte. Now it's more at least at price or maybe like a round early.
Yeah. And I did have him ranked again as my number one hitting prospect just for 2024 value on last week's rookie hitter tiers 2.0, rookie hitter rankings 2.0, I should say. And I'll be releasing the pitching version of that article after the show today. Okay, Bubba, who is the fifth player you wanted to highlight?
Okay, so this one I can understand if there's going to be pushback. I'll be fine on that one, but I put Nelson Velasquez. And if you want to say he won't produce enough to keep his everyday job at DH, okay, we can have a fair discussion there. Maybe Renfro gets more DH time because maybe Drew Waters and Kyle Isbell both force the hand. That's fair. But I think in reality, when you look at the Royals lineup, they need pop. That's why they went and got Renfro. Nelson Velasquez's pop is undeniable. What we saw last year, once he got traded over from Chicago, he hit 14 of his 17 home runs in about 40 games with the Royals. He had a 22% barrel rate and around 50% hard hit rate in that span. The power is ridiculous. Like, you just can't, you know, fabricate that. Now, there are some swing and misses. We get that. Average could be an issue. What he does is great. Okay. He'll hit in the middle of the order if he DHs, maybe fifth, give or take, which is a plus. Where I differ is if he does find a way to be the quote-unquote regular DH, probably plays 100 and let's say 25 to 30 games. I'll be fair in that regard. That still blows projections out of the water. They have him around 100, 108 games right now, and they have him like sitting below 20 home runs. Like, even if he plays 100 games, I could see 20 home runs coming from Nelson Velasquez. So the projections just on their projection site feels low to me. I know they're more cautious and they all take kind of a floor approach with projections. There's just a ceiling that Velasquez can bring to the table late in your drafts as a power source. And if he does creep into 130 games as like a regular DH, this dude is a 35-ish home run guy, in my opinion, maybe more. And the projections are a little too cautious on him.
Yeah, Velasquez, like you said, he came over midseason, only played 40 games for the Royals, but he ranked fifth on the Royals in home runs in those 40 games. That's crazy. You know, so Bobby Witt hits 30 in 158 games. Sal Perez hits 23 in 140 games. Melendez hits 16 in 148 games. Michael Massey hits 15 in 129 games. And then Nelson Velasquez hits 14 in 40 games. Yep. So you're telling me that that guy is going to all of a sudden like be in trouble from a playing time standpoint this year? Like, I think he has to just be bad to lose out on the playing time. I don't think that they're just going to not give it to him out of the gate.
Yep, 100% with you. That's why I think the projections need to be a little more on the boost on that one and respect the power a little more. Like, how often are you going to hit 14 in 40 games? Not very often, but would you be shocked if he just continued like a 8 home run a month stretch? Like, that's easily in his wheelhouse, it feels like, and that's very doable to me.
And I've got Velasquez kind of he's sort of like my backup option. Like, I prefer Matt Wallner straight up, but I have those guys kind of right next to each other as just sort of big time power options at that point in the draft. You know, you can get both those guys after pick 300. Okay. Let's head to a message from our sponsor here before I get to my five players. As I said at the top, we are brought to you by Fantrax. And, you know, Fantrax is just simply the best site for anything Keeper Dynasty related. Currently participating in the Baseball America Dynasty Mock Draft, which will be in the BA Mag. Of course, we're doing that on Fantrax. Really the only option for that type of a thing. I've got some first-year player drafts that are about to kick off. Of course, those are all going on Fantrax. You know, not only is it the most kind of user-friendly site when you compare it to some of these sites that have been around for a long time and have never really gotten a true facelift, it's got all the players in the pool. And we're in year 2024 right now. We shouldn't be playing on sites for dynasty leagues where you got to send the commissioner an email that you're trying to add a player who's not in the system. Let's kind of get with the program, get on Fantrax. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's FANTRAX.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/Blue Wire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, Bubba. So, you were kind of prefacing the Nelson Velasquez call with, you know, people are going to get mad at me. Like I said at the top, I'm not even saying like this is definitely wrong, but you know, some of these instances I'm going to point to are like, this could be wrong and here's why. And I teased it a little bit, I'm fully with you on Noel V. Marte, being under projected in terms of playing time with the Reds. I got to look at Christian Encarnacion Strand as well. I'm not as confident about Encarnacion Strand as I am with Noel V. Marte, but this is more just kind of a look at roster resource. And, you know, you have to put somebody from this team on the bench. They've got Christian Encarnacion Strand just sitting on the bench, not in a platoon. I'm more with where the projection systems are on Encarnacion Strand. And this is just, you know, I wouldn't even say, like, I'm sure Jason Martinez like wouldn't say, oh yeah, I definitely don't think Christian Encarnacion Strand is going to play a role on this team. There's only 9 spots on roster resource. You got to put someone on the bench, but I think it should be Jonathan India who's on the bench and Christian Encarnacion Strand in that DH spot. Just is kind of like a default batting order. It's just, it's hard for me to picture the guy with the most game power on the entire team being the guy that just rarely is in the lineup. So if you look at the projection systems, they're kind of closer to where I'm at, you know, 111 games, 100 games. I think that's about right. I think that Jonathan India is kind of a premium righty bat off the bench. Jake Fraley is a premium lefty bat off the bench. And Encarnacion Strand is probably the biggest casualty of the guys that are in their most days. But I do think it'll be him who, like, I think Encarnacion Strand plays more than Jonathan India this season.
Yeah, this is one of those that I was like anti-Strand for like early draft season. I just wanted nothing to do with it. So many questions. Literally about 30 minutes before the show, I drafted him as my first baseman in the DC because I'm starting to grow to the point that even if he hits his projections, strong numbers. Do you want more in a DC? Yes, but gives you that flexibility. I think there's also a thing with Strand maybe the beginning of the season is frustrating for fantasy managers, but I think by the end of the season, he is the dude, like at least the more regular guy, either at DH, first base, they find a way to get the bat in the lineup, kind of like what you were saying. India just signed that really friendly 2-year deal, really friendly one, which makes him easier to trade, in my opinion, kind of more attractive to trade if people want. So, you know, kind of get him out there, show off some of his talents real quick. Then you can flip him. That's something they've been trying to trade him forever. Now you got a friendly deal in place as well. So I wouldn't be shocked if, like, we see Strand kind of be the guy, Encarnacion Strand, by the end. So I'm with you there. Like, at worst, his projection seems, okay, reasonable. But I think there is a definitely, like, an upside appeal to him. So to your point of him just being the lone bench guy seems kind of odd. He can kind of play all over. And one thing I was really impressed with him is, and again, I'm kind of always, I'm cautious with younger players. I need to see things first. He hit for average, which really surprised me. Like, that was a big boost. When I think, like, big power, you know, swing guys, I think the average could suffer potentially. But it seems more like a Torkelson, 233 average. Like, will he be better than that? Eventually. I thought Strand could maybe be more in that vein. So the fact he hit for average with the power in that ballpark, I'm with you. I think there's a solid floor based on the projections, but there should be a ceiling as well with the, if he does get the playing time that hopefully he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I haven't even drafted him yet, but it's not because I see him on the bench on roster resource. Yeah. So my next guy, and this is, again, this is, I don't know if this is cheating or not, but if you go to roster resource and look at the Twins, Willy Castro is on the bench. And he's got the blue shade, which means short side of the platoon. Now, he might, like, I could see Willy Castro not starting, like, in three of the first four games of the season for the Twins, for instance. But I do think Willy Castro gets closer to everyday playing time by the end of the season than, you know, whatever, short side of platoon. Like, I look at Byron Buxton. You know, he's going to be playing center field again. That's exciting for him. Like, he loves playing center field. I just don't think that's going to go all that well. You know, that's not going out on a limb, of course. You know, I wouldn't draft Byron Buxton. I don't think he's going to play every day. Obviously, if you're managing roster resource, you're not going to be like, yeah, Byron Buxton, you know, obviously he's going to play while he's healthy, but that's probably not going to last very long. Carlos Correa, another guy who misses time. Quite often. Alex Kirilloff, another guy who misses time quite often. How long is Carlos Santana an everyday player? There's just, you know, Max Kepler is not listed as being in a platoon on here. That could be correct as well. But just in general, like, Willy Castro is going to play a lot more than the typical guy that you would expect to open the year in the short side of a platoon.
Yeah, I love Willy Castro. Like, even Kyle Farmer, you could almost put a little extra on that as well. But Castro's the preferred option. That's who you're talking about here. So I'm with you on that, because it is funny. You look at, you know, Carlos Santana's projected to be first base. I think he maybe platoons more with Kirilloff at first base. That leads, you know, Buxton to maybe a couple more DHs. Julian could go back to DH, where he was going to be before Polanco was even traded, and Castro was still going to get his playing time. Like, there's so many avenues where yeah, they have to build the rosters on roster resource and do this, that, and the other. But, like, would anybody be shocked if Castro plays at least 130 games this year? I wouldn't be. Like, there's so many avenues, and we can't project injuries, like you're saying. But with the Twins, with that roster, you kind of can project injuries on that team. So there's a ton of avenues for Willy Castro, and I'm with you there. The speed we saw last year was ridiculous. A little bit of pop, but just where he's going, you can project a lot more out of him, like you're saying. So I like that call a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think Willy Castro just straight up plays more than Byron Buxton this year, straight up plays more than Alex Kirilloff this year.
Yep, 100%. Just,
you know, I don't take any pleasure saying that about Byron Buxton. It's just, it is what it is.
Eventually, you just accept until you prove me differently type things, and this is kind of one of those moments. Like, I think we'd all agree, we'd love to see Buxton play a full season. That'd be awesome. But, like, it's been that story for how many years now, James? So,
yeah, as someone who is – targeting this Twins rotation as early and often as I can, I'd love it if Byron Buxton played a full season.
Yep.
Speaking of the Twins rotation, it's kind of cheating, but so Anthony DeSclafani listed as the SP5 for the Twins. I think he probably would be my pick to open the season as their fifth starter, but I think Louis Varland joins the rotation before the end of April, one way or another. And it's going to be very similar, I think, to what happened with Bailey Ober last year. Bailey Ober was someone that was widely available on waivers last year because he wasn't in the rotation. And then he got a spot start. I think it was a Kenta Maeda injury in late April. And then Bailey Ober just takes the rotation job, basically. I think Louis Varland essentially kind of takes Di Sclafani's job from him early in the season. You know, you want to give a veteran like that, I think it makes sense to give the veteran the chance to, like, hey, Di Sclafani, if you want to have a huge resurgent year, reestablish yourself as a big league starter, great. But I think once he kind of shows that he's not that type of guy, then it's Louis Varland's turn.
Yep, I love the Louis Varland call. He's been a target in draft rooms. We saw signs of it at times last year, kind of struggled, got hurt, whatever you want to angle to go back to AAA. Looked really good at AAA. Bullpen work wasn't bad when he came back. And I'm with you. I guess someone that's watched Tony Disco for a couple years, like, he's a good veteran guy that'll eat innings here and there, but he can't stay healthy either. Like, that's just a thing at his age. He's not going to. He's going to have at least one or two IL stints. That's just par for the course now with Disco. So he's better like a long man or a spot starter where Louis Varland could insert into that rotation. And there's also Chris Paddock. Like, we haven't seen Paddock throw a full season in a long time. I think we're all rooting for him. We saw the stuff he had last year towards the end, especially out of the bullpen. Very promising. But how far can he go into the season where Varland can do gango far? We've seen the innings last year. So I'm with you on Louis Varland. I think that's one of those that, you know, my co-host Ryan Bloomfield, Varland's been popping up on a lot of Bloom boards for different stats this year. You mentioned you like the Twins rotation. A lot of Twins have been popping up on Bloom boards this year. They're ridiculous. And Varland's kind of following that ilk. Kind of, you mentioned Bailey Ober and some other ones. So I'm with you on Louis Varland. I think he's a guy that should be moving up boards. You should kind of expect, can we say 25 starts? I'd say 20 for sure. But like you said, by end of April, if he's April on, we're talking 25 starts. And that's a tremendous price tag he has then.
Yeah, now in Fab leagues, that does mean you're drafting a guy that you might not be able to use in early April, maybe even in mid-April. So you just have to know that. But I would say don't shy away from drafting Louis Varland even in Fab leagues just because you see that he's on the outside looking in on roster resource.
Good 30th round pick.
Yeah, in a OC for sure.
Yes.
Okay, I want to stay in the AL Central. The Tigers third base situation.
Cool, good one.
So right now it's on roster resource. It's listed as Zach McKinstry and Andy Ibañez platooning, essentially. They might do that, but if I were running the team, I think there's just way more upside in trying to see what Matt Buehrling has as the everyday third baseman. Now they could get kind of complicated here with the platoons. They could do maybe Ibañez starts at second base against lefties and Colt Keith sits. But again, I don't think Colt Keith should be sitting against any type of pitcher this year. Like, the Tigers should be trying to develop, you know, impactful everyday position players. I think we can rule that out for Zach McKinstry, who's heading into his age 29 season. And if you just do Steamer 600 on just how valuable would these guys be if they each got 600 plate appearances, Buehrling is almost twice as valuable as McKinstry. I think McKinstry is good for like a win over 600 PAs, and Buehrling's closer to two wins. I also think it's noteworthy that Buehrling, I believe, was one of the first players acquired by this new regime. So obviously they like him. They like his athleticism. And I think this is a guy that could give you like close to 15 homers and 15 steals if he was playing a lot. Maybe they go with the low upside platoon of Zach McKinstry playing against righties. That's just such a low upside way to go. Like, we kind of know what Zach McKinstry is. He's a really solid utility player. He can play all over the field. But, like, do you want to be giving this guy starts against every righty at third base? Like, I think that's such a low upside move. If you see Buehrling projected to be on the bench, you know, he might be on the bench, but I think there's a chance that he turns into an NBA guy for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. The 15-15 was the first thing that came to mind for Vierling. And he found his way to 134 games last year. The production, I think we're expecting better production this year, but that was kind of a sporadic in and out thing where if he played every day at third base, the comfort zone, all that good stuff. But he's kind of got that Willie Castro vibe to the Tigers, like not going to run a ton, but a guy that should be playing more and be quite productive for you, like you're saying. And I believe, yeah, Vierling, he came over from in that Phillies trade, I believe. Now that I'm thinking back on it, and that was one of those where people are pretty optimistic when that happened to begin with. So to keep kind of sitting him there would be kind of strange. So I'm with you on Vierling. I think that's a fun one late in drafts. And I believe he's got pretty multi-position eligibility in the DC formats as well. So that's pretty fun. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, he's 3BOF, which is great.
Yep.
Okay, just another one. I've got a few quick hitters I just want to get your take on in a second, but I did just want to say, look, like Mike Trout, you know, all the projection systems have him for over 540 plate appearances. You know, he hasn't gotten over 500 since 2019. And this is going to be the least competitive the Angels have been. I mean, not that they're competitive very often, but like this is going into the season, this is as hopeless as the Angels have been. Yeah. So, you know, how much do we expect Mike Trout to play through any kind of nagging injuries this year for a team that's going absolutely nowhere? You know, I just think you can't responsibly project Mike Trout for over 500 plate appearances. At least I don't think you can. So, and he's not even as valuable as where he's getting drafted if you do project him for those PAs. So just, I think, easy under on Mike Trout's projected playing time. And then on the flip side, I'm going to go way over on Aaron Hicks's projected playing time. I just, you know, he's under 400 plate appearances by pretty much everyone. And not only do I expect Mike Trout to miss a significant time this year, but like Mickey Moniak could be hitting like 170 at the end of April. Taylor Ward could miss time again. You know, they've got Brandon Drury kind of slotted in at DH right now on roster resource. I just think Aaron Hicks is going to be playing most days by Memorial Day at least. So just two guys where I would go up and down on the projections in the Angels outfield.
I could see that. And I actually had a listener is DMing me the other day asking about Mike Trout and this, that. I said, you can take your chances if you want. I'm just not there. Like, it's almost sadly in that kind of Byron Buxton ilk of, you know, I just don't know what you're going to play for me. It's tough to kind of jump in on that. The Hicks call's fun. Like, and I was just kind of looking at the rest of the roster on the Angels and they're even just playing time projections wise. This is similar to when we started out talking about the Royals. Can you predict like the outfield there? There's so many little pieces like that in Anaheim. Like, do we try to trust Joe Odell again? They haven't projected for 70 games played. Like, what if he somehow plays 120 and finally finds it? That's a big if, obviously. You mentioned Moniak. There's so many pieces in that Angels setup there that makes it really tough. But to your Hicks and your Trout call, Hicks is free in drafts. So that's a fun one if he does reach the projections you're mentioning about, especially outfield. I know this isn't a full-on draft strategy for DCs, but you get another outfielder late. You want, you know, 10 outfielders, 9 outfielders, depends on what your setup is. Cause as you know, everyone gets hurt. Like, that's just the way it works. Moniak played the most rabbit foot, you know, lucky rabbit foot card last year when it came to hitting. So that regression is expected, like you hinted at. So yeah, Hicks could be a fun one. They sign him for a reason. They have nothing to lose. At worst, they'll want to play him a lot. So if he does strike gold, they can trade him. So that makes Memorial Day make sense as well to keep him in that lineup. So I think Aaron Hicks is a big one for sure.
He was also just good with the O's. With
the last Orioles, year. Yeah. He got out of New York and he was fine.
Right. Like he slashed 275, 381, 425 for a 129 WRC plus with the O's last year. And like, if you want to kind of extrapolate out kind of a 15 homer, 12 steal type of pace. So I think he could be useful at least in 15 team leagues at some point.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. Like, yeah, very, very cheap too. Very cheap.
Okay, Bubba, I've just got a few quick hitters before we get to our post 300 ADP sleeper starting pitchers. I know this might not be very, very fun to say, but I can picture the Guardians starting Kyle Manzardo at AAA. You know, I wouldn't do it if I were running the Guardians. He would not start at AAA, but they are just so cheap that getting the extra year of team control by starting him for three weeks at AAA, I think it's at least a 50% chance. I've also mentioned in my rookie hitter rankings article that it's so rare that first basemen are worth their like final years of arbitration that it's just, I wouldn't be playing those games with Manzardo, but you know, they could do it. They could go with Gabriel Arias at first base and like Will Brennan up, who's currently projected to be in the minors by Roster Resource. So just be careful with Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's one thing I've been kind of preaching. And the other factor is not just they're cheap. They went and got De Los Santos in the Rule 5 draft. So it's just like another power bat they have to have on the bench or they lose them. And so it's a corner infield power bat that makes, like, if you want to quote-unquote think platoon, like they have them look like they projected a platoon with Manzardo on Roster Resource. But, you know, you can move Josh Naylor to first base, and there's just so many moving parts there that I think that's another thing working against Manzardo, at least early on, is they have to give De Los Santos a chance to at least make the team and go from there, which makes things complicated as well.
Yeah, so I'm, again, not saying he's going to start at AAA, but just don't – if he gets sent to AAA,
don't be surprised.
late March, don't be like, holy crap, I thought he was going to be up. Like, yeah, he might not be up. Another quick one, you know, I know everyone's assuming Emmett Sheehan's the guy in the fifth spot, but I'm curious to see what Gavin Stone looks like in spring training. Just don't take Emmett Sheehan just being like, he's definitely the fifth guy till Walker Buehler's in there. Gavin Stone could be really good in spring training. He finished really strong. Wouldn't rule that one out. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, 100%. That's something the Dodgers have done year in and year out. Like with at least one of their roster spots, they always have, it feels like, three or four like young arms, and they'll let them see who the hot guy is leaving camp, especially with the, like, you have Yarbrough, if worst comes to worse. You mentioned Buehler, like, there's guys coming soon. So they always like to use that young arm and see who's hot and go with it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a meritocracy in spring training between those two. Do you think Jazz Chisholm and Jesus Sanchez are both going to be platoon this year?
No. I just, like, if they're healthy and they're doing their thing, it's just annoying. Like Chisholm, we've seen move down the order when a lefty's on the mound. But you, like, why? You're the Marlins. What are we doing here if we're taking him out of the order? That's just ridiculous. Sanchez, if you want to, like, I could see maybe an angle. But, you know, looking at their options right now on the bench, Sanchez is better than all of them. So,
yeah,
in reality, Chisholm and Sanchez should be staying there.
Yeah, so with Jazz, like, I know he's been bad against lefties, but they just have such little position player talent. Pulling the plug on him against lefties this early in his career, I just don't see it happening. And then you mentioned the guys on the bench. Like, yeah, I could see Jesus Sanchez getting platooned for maybe like Dane Myers, but I can't see him getting platooned for Vidal Brujan or Jonathan Davis. Exactly. And both those guys are out of options, which I understand. But like, if those are the guys that make the bench, I just can't picture them sitting Sanchez against every lefty.
Yep.
Do you buy DJ Stewart as a strong side platoon bat for the Mets?
That's a fun one because the powers, he had his moments last year. It was the nicest way I'll say it. I would like Mark Vientos to play every single day at DH. That's the dude I would love to be there. I'm pretty sure that's where we're going with this conversation. Everyone likes to see the lefty-righty thing. That's the name of the game. I'm going to say no. I'll give Mark Vientos the edge in that one.
Yeah, I mean, I looked into DJ Stewart's production and, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be necessarily, but he had a 61% pull rate last year.
Yeah, he ran good. He ran real good. Let's put it that way. Like, I wouldn't call it streaky as much as it feels like, but he ran real good for a decent amount of time.
I would think if pitchers know that you're trying to pull the ball that much, that they could probably get you out. But yeah, like you said, was running pretty good last year. The projections do not have him performing at a pace that would deserve that much playing time, especially down at the bottom of the defensive spectrum. And the Steamer 600 projections do like Vientos more than Stewart. So just thought I'd point that one out. And then one last one. I just want to double check that Roster Resource still has this. Roster Resource has Nick Lodolo opening in the minors, which I would understand them going that route. I just think it's worth pointing that out to people. You know, he's not, you know, didn't stack innings last year. He's dealt with a ton of injuries, back issues, most are the most concerning thing for me going forward. But, you know, if you're taking Nick Lodolo, just be aware that you might not be able to use him early in the season. I don't know if you've, have you heard anything on that, on what they're going to do with Lodolo start year?
No, we literally had our SP3 preview last night, and Lodolo was a topic of conversation because Bloomfield loves Nick Lodolo. And we talked about the projection or Ross Resource having him in the minor leagues. And I think it's more of a wait and see thing through camp. Like if he's looking good, maybe it's like him versus Graham Ashcraft, him versus Abbott type thing. Otherwise, maybe they let him keep getting good because it wasn't an arm injury. So if he's looking good, he probably gets a spot, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so just more something to just kind of be aware of. I don't really have a dog in this fight, but just something to be aware of. Okay, Bubba, as I kind of teased earlier, this is going to be the final edition of my post 380p sleeper series, save starting pitching for last. So we're both going to pick one starting pitcher with a 2024 ADP after 300. In NFBC 15-team draft and hold leagues that we think is the best value. I kind of gave you a list of guys that are going in the 300 to 400 range, but if you want to go deeper than that, you're welcome to. And I'm sure, like me, there's plenty of these guys that you like, but does anyone stand out to you?
Yeah, I just stuck to this list because we could have gone on for a long time in DCs. But I think Chase Silseth, I know it's a popular name that'll be mentioned in this like area, this pocket of starting pitchers. But we saw a lot from Silseth. First off, I like the fact he did this at age 23. So there can still be more developments here. And he threw close to 100 innings last year, which is also big for me. And finished with a 3.96 ERA. But what I really enjoyed seeing out of Silseth was the change from the first half to the second half as he got better and better. You know, a 3.21 ERA in the second half and 33 innings compared to the 18 innings in the first half. So it wasn't like a ton of innings, but it was more dominating innings is what really, really stood out to me. And the second half had almost a 30% strikeout rate, a 20.4% K to walk. He was just the pitch mix changes he made from the first half to the second half were tremendous. And these are gains I think we can make. And it's something we saw with the Angels. Like Detmers had his little window of changes and it kind of ended rough. Canning finished phenomenally. So this is something maybe with the new coaching staff and regime in here, things can change. But Silseth is a guy that I'll be circling as a later round DC target.
Yeah, I haven't ended up with him yet, but I love the pitcher. It's more just kind of being scared of the pitcher wins aspect with him, but
yeah, shouldn't be many. Yes.
that's really the only knock though. Like I agree with everything you said. Like he's a very talented young pitcher. I think the ratios will be solid. You know, you're probably going to sit him, you know, for like the Astros and the Rangers, but I think like for a DC, like you said, my guy is actually going right next to Silseth. And he's someone I'm drafting for the wins, and that's Dean Kramer. You know, he's boring. Like he's not a guy that people are projecting to like be a massive breakout this year. But I think he gets you 170, 180 innings for maybe the best team in the American League. Another 100 win season seems to be in the cards to me, just given how absolutely loaded they are at every single position. And he won 13 games last year. I think there's a chance for 15 wins from Dean Kramer, and he's going at pick 336 on average. So love a bunch of guys in this range, but I think Kramer is my most rostered MLB starting pitcher.
Yeah, I love the Kramer shout out. One thing you mentioned that I really like, it's harder to find the deeper into these drafts you go, are the innings. He threw over 170 innings last year, so he's like ready to rock and roll, barring something crazy. You mentioned the team context. Yeah, there's a lot to like about Kramer. Maybe pitches outside of Tropicana in the friendliest pitching environment in the East, all things considered. So, yeah, there is a lot to like there with Dean Kramer. I can't deny that at all.
Bubba, This has been awesome. Why don't you let the listeners know where they can follow your work and all the podcasts you're pumping out?
Just follow me on the X or the Twitter, whatever you call it these days, at BDentric. You get everything tweeted out there. But Bench with Bubba, a couple times a week. James has been on that show a few times, which is he's one of my most actually most guest people on there, which is great. Bubba in the Bloom twice a week with Ryan Bloomfield, who everybody knows in the industry. Great guy, great analyst. And then just, you know, Fantasy Pros Pitcher List. And I got my own Substack, Casey, but I have a ton of things. So just go check out Twitter and you'll get it all there.
Yeah, man, you are you and Rob DiPietro are probably the most active podcasters in the biz. Really respect it, respect the grind.
Thanks.
And really appreciate you taking the time to hop on with me, man. This was absolutely great.
Anytime.
It's been, yeah, thanks, Bubba. This has been the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by Fantrax. I'll have another episode on Wednesday.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.